Hello again, it's me, Jerry, and my brother Julian, between Consensus and Conspiracy podcast. It's the fourth one we've done. We normally talk about politics and the culture war and the arguing and the bickering and basically how it's just kind of social commentary, isn't it, normally, and how I think politics is becoming a bit of a team sport at the moment. It's just entertainment, isn't it, a lot of the time now. It's just, you know, screaming from the terraces and stuff. So it's usually commentary on that. The last 3 weeks, we've been mainly talking about coronavirus because we've been stuck indoors and that's all that's been going on. But I think we're probably going to, we haven't talked about what we're going to talk about, but I think we're going to drift back into a combination of two today, because I think whereas politics has kind of died down a little bit, I think it's definitely reared its head in the last week here in America, isn't it? So I think we'll probably talk about politics this time. I just wanted to do...
more so in America, but more so than anywhere else, I'd say.
Listen, I like America. I like America. I like its story. I like its look. But I tell you what, I'm so glad. And there are times I think, I wish I would have moved there. But there are times like now, I think, thank God. If I had to put up with that all the time, it'd drive you mad. No wonder people are getting driven mad.
Insane, isn't it?
I wanted just on last week, because I was just a little bit paranoid talking about Boris Johnson and Winston Churchill too close together. I thought that might put off a lot of people that might listen, because people don't like Boris being compared to Churchill. But in my defence, I didn't compare him to Churchill. I was talking about two different things quite close to each other. I don't think there is a comparison.
Just on that Churchill quote, I mean, you mentioned last week, someone you knew listened to the previous week, I know we brought it up again last week, and he made the point, at the time we were talking about the confusion with the wearing face masks, and how my issue was that the government went out of their way to kind of lie to the public to stop there being a rush on face masks. They didn't want the public to go out and buy, in my opinion, I don't think they wanted the public to go out and hoard face masks in order for them to be available for healthcare workers. But they went about it in an untruthful way, I believe, and just kind of come up with this idea that we don't actually need face masks. You can kind of see that changing as the days go by. We mentioned the Churchill quote about lying to... Do you remember how it goes?
Yeah, is it? Sometimes in times of war, the truth should be protected with a bodyguard of lies.
Yeah. So the guy you know mentioned that we kind of contradict with ourselves. And I think, just going back to that briefly, I think one of the biggest issues is that we don't live in that world anymore. We don't live it. I agree wholeheartedly with his quote, but the problem is nowadays we don't live in that world. We've got information coming at us from all angles, so it's not nearly as easy to lie to the public, and that's the problem. When you do lie to the public and the public are savvy to it, and they can get their sources of information from different media, and those lies come out, then it just, again, it goes back to what we called. It just leads to the conspiracy theory, doesn't it? It leads to the distrust of all of it, the whole institution of politics or the media or whatever. And I think it's a fine balance. I was having a conversation with someone this week about WikiLeaks and Julian Assange and Manning and all the people that were involved in leaking sensitive information, mainly from the US, over the last few years. And we were talking about whether it was the right thing to have to extradite Assange. And it's just, the problem is, we don't live in the world of kind of like governmental secrets anymore. Any kind of like scruffy little kid in his basement can hack into whatever company or whatever group they want it, really. And I think we've got to look at it in a different way. Unless you can't criminalise all these people. We kind of almost got old-fashioned rules. The politicians in many ways haven't caught up. I don't think the law wars have caught up with the world we live in. You know, it's just something I wanted to mention.
Yeah, I thought that a little while ago, didn't I? I thought, you know, it's a saying, I think I've thought that, that was a lot of talk at the time when Trump won the election, I think, if I remember rightly, that we got tools and a system that is no longer suited to the world that we live in technology-wise. You know, I remember listening to Yuval Noah Harari, and he was talking about communism, and he said that communism and Soviet communism could not have happened 50 years prior. It couldn't have happened 100 years prior. It could only happen when transport and information was able to pass around a bit quicker. So they had train lines, they had the telegraphs and stuff like that. So they were able to kind of spread messages quicker than ever before and get about quicker than ever before. So I suppose the world and the systems that we have kind of evolved naturally with the technology that we have. And maybe you're right. Maybe the system is the old system is creaking with so much more technology. But I don't. But I'm not sure whether or not we're better at finding the truth, because I think there's so many messages out there that just muddy the water, isn't there?
Yeah.
I don't remember it. I wrote it down in my book, but it's in another room, so I won't get it. But I remember I watched Chernobyl recently. And it was in his suicide letter, the guy that was kind of one of the main heroes in it, kind of committed suicide a few years later. And in it, it was kind of, I think the gist of it was that people tell you lies and you believe them or you don't believe them. But what happens is that you get so many lies that you just no longer even, you know, the truth just becomes a bit of an illusion in the end. And I don't really want to live in that world, Jules. You know, that's why when I'm a bit adverse to conspiracy theories. Any of my mates would tell me, as soon as they start to go down that road, I kind of get a bit irritated by it. Because I don't want to see the world in such an ugly and nasty place. But equally, I do want to be sceptical with information I get. So I don't want to close everything off. I mean, the Bill Gates one's been doing the rounds this week, which does my head in a bit, because this is a man who's £4.5 billion he's put to trying to help people in Africa. And then you've got some people saying, well, he's testing illegally on village people and stuff like that. And it's 4 people died or 8 people died and this, that and the other. And it's like, well, I don't know. You don't know. I mean, I could look at Snopes. Snopes will say, well, that accusation is false. This accusation's false. And I could watch a documentary on Netflix. But I want to live in a world where sometimes I believe that some people have made so much money, they realise that they can't do that they can't improve their life with the amount of money they've got. But if they could go, leave a legacy and improve the world and eradicate some diseases that are quite, you know, maybe difficult because of logistics in a part of the world that's really poor, I want to live in a world where I think, well, that's a good thing, and there are people like that, because I'm not so nihilistic about the human race. I think there are good humans. I think in the main we are, but we're fallible. Well, I don't know.
It's a difficult one, isn't it? I mean, that BBC documentary came out a few years ago. I think it was called, was it Hyper Normalization?
Yeah.
I thought that was brilliant, and it was a real eye-opener. Basically said that, it's that it came at it from the angle of kind of Russian misinformation going back 20, 30 years. As the Soviet Union was kind of falling apart, the way the government sought to control their population was do just that, just hit them with so much information that they didn't know what to believe.
Yeah.
A lot of people just gave up on the whole political scene.
Yeah.
And it does. It's a tough one, isn't it? Because it really is. It feels to me like the genie's out of the bottle. We're not going to be able to put it back in. And it's so infuriating.
Yeah, I know. It's difficult, isn't it? It is. I mean, I don't know. I just find this time really odd. I find people really strange. I've been, politics has been creeping in again, isn't it? What I've found really interesting is that how everyone seems to use this pandemic to confirm their prejudice. So you've got people that are anti-Europe will say, look, this just goes to show when Europe's needed, it's not there, it doesn't bind together, it's everyone for themselves. But then you get, then you got the pro Europeans that then say, look, if we were part of Europe, we would have had the PPE a lot quicker. And this goes to prove that it was a mistake and we need to be working together. And then you got Polly Toynbee saying that this just proves that the NHS was austerity and this, that, and the other. But coincidentally, this is all these opinions were held before. And then you got Charles Moore, the Spectator, who's always been a critic of the NHS, said this goes to prove the NHS is a slow-moving monolith. And then you got Afua Hirsch in The Guardian, who's always banging on about everything being racist. Guess what? Coronavirus is racist because, we're racist because it's affecting certain people more than other people. Yet you say, well, there could be reasons for that. And then what they do, they say, yeah, but the far right, they will say that this those reasons. We had it a little while ago, didn't we, why it was affecting Muslims more. And it was because a lot of Asian families do live intergenerational in big houses.
Yeah.
And also there are issues with diet in the South Asian community. There's high blood pressure and diabetes and stuff at higher rates. And also the good people working in the NHS or poorer people not being, you know, maybe essential workers that have to go to work. So there's loads of reasons. But as ever, people just pick the bits that already suit their prejudice. I just get bored with it. You know what I was thinking today? I swayed this week, right? Because the politics has started up again. And it just does my head in. I got into a little, I followed a little debate on Facebook where someone was trying to say that all the countries that are doing really well have got left-wing governments and all the countries that are doing really badly have got right-wing governments. So apparently France is right-wing, even though not that long ago Macron was the darling of the left. I could reference Guardian and New Statesman articles if you want. Italy's led by the right, even though I think Salvini got kicked out a little while back, didn't he? And the left or the centrists took over. Who else? Oh, yeah. They they're a big long list, and I nearly said... New Zealand. New Zealand is evidence. Oh, forget the fact that it's a million miles from anywhere. It's an island that is so secluded. Let's not take into consideration that London and New York are the two major worldwide hubs that have got everyone coming in and out. But we could compare that fairly to New Zealand. Do you know what I mean? In the middle of nowhere, there isn't a hub for anywhere. But because Jacinda Ardern or whatever her name is, that's it, because she's a good lefty and that goes to prove it. I just nearly put, I'm not good at two-word responses, but I'm good at writing big, long texts that probably no one reads. But I'm so tempted to say, you forgot Israel. Because Israel seems to be doing good, don't they? And they're far from on the left. But it amazes me how people could just... That was my issue. There was someone on the radio the other day. To me, science, if you want to come with an open mind to try and work out an answer to something, what you need to do is look at the information and then come to a conclusion. Too often, in my opinion, people have already got the conclusion in their head and they simply look for the evidence to back it up. And it's not just silly people. There was a woman who was the head scientist talking about on the radio a couple of months ago about screen time on children. And she said on the radio, we know screen time damages children. We've just got to find the evidence. And to me, that's putting a cart before the horse. And I've got two O-levels. You know, how come the woman on the radio I feel like I'm ranting, but how come the woman on the radio isn't pulling her up on this? You know, and so I see it far too often. It bores me senseless. So I swing, and then you got Trump talking about injects and disinfectant and stuff like that. And I thought the other day, you know what? I'm too intelligent for this world. This world's too dumb for me. And then I had to go and help my 7-year-old daughter with her homework. and that soon sobered me up. I've never heard of adverbs of time, adverbs of manner, and what's this? Adjective nouns or adjective... Honestly, this is for a seven-year-old. We're talking about the Shang Dynasty. I'd never heard of it. And I'm meant to, you know, I'm meant to be the hero in her eyes, pretending I know everything. Where's the phone? Where's the phone? And then, have you ever looked up adverb?
No wonder kids grow up and reach their teenage years and then they look at their parents in a totally different way.
You loser. What a loser. And all you could do is think,
I've been with this god for so long.
And all you could do is say, okay, I can't argue with her, but you wait. I'll just remind you when you have kids. I don't know. It's gone probably mental, isn't it, this week? The Trump business has made the Trump business with the disinfectant.
Well, yeah, but that whole kind of like the American scene is so messy, isn't it? It really is.
You know, to me, what it looks like to me, I was saying to you, it reminds me of me on the podcast last week, right? It's obvious someone's told Trump something that he doesn't quite understand, but I think he's a solution-orientated person, so he's thinking, oh, right, this is good news, I'll spin this. Don't get me wrong, in the past I've said I can't work out if he's a genius or an idiot. Do you remember me saying that? And that comes back to haunt me sometimes. Because I think you could judge intelligence in different ways. I think he's street smart, I think he's book stupid, right? This is where I've come to, right? And I think he's destructive. I think he's divisive. I think he's using this as a tool, and I'm not sure it should be. This is where everyone should be trying to get together and solve a problem. But look, as far as I'm concerned, both sides are pretty ugly in this sense. I just sort of think America is just a monstrous place politically. To me, it's kind of obvious. It looks like they've told him something he doesn't quite understand. He's then got up on a podium and he's tried to say what he's heard. And then he's looking at the doctor as if to say for confirmation. And she's looking absolutely horrified because she's saying, that's an odd take on what we've just told him 5 minutes ago. But I was saying to you, it reminded me on the podcast last week, because I was talking about, I watched that Horizon program about viruses. And I was trying to talk about the smallpox that send receptors, and they send. And what happens is the body sends their receptors to divert the smallpox receptors. But what happens is the smallpox sends fake receptors. Sorry, I've got a child jumping in front of me now. It's going to like distracting me. And I was trying to explain that, and I just bodged it up totally. And I'm just trying to think that's probably similar to what he did. But then what happens is then it just now you can take that is ripe for ripping the arse out of the fella, right? But then it just then goes on to he's saying to inject or digest the disinfectant and stuff like that. And I've just got to take it too far, and then all of a sudden I just think it's just this dumb Punch and Judy shit again. It just drives me. Nuts. Just does my head in. And it just goes on for days. Huh?
I know. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, 3 or 4 fucking days of it. It's so unhelpful, isn't it? At a time like this, it's just outrageous.
And the thing is, right, and this is my issue on it, I don't know if many people follow American politics, but Joe Biden, who looks like is the Democratic leader, to me, it's fairly obvious that he's not all there mentally, yeah? Look, he's been in politics for ages. I quite like the sound of him when he talks, but he's not on the ball. It looks like he's
I think he's like 78, isn't he? I think he's 79 by the time the election comes up. And it does seem like there's elements of senile dementia kicking.
Yeah. And so there are so many examples of him saying stupid things in the last 2 weeks. Unreal. He's tripped over so much stuff. But you don't get the same amplification when he does it as when Trump does it. But then you could argue that Trump's president and Joe Biden isn't. But Joe Biden is going to be president, isn't he? And that's the thing.
Exactly. That's the thing. Yeah, you're right. He's the one that they want to be an improvement.
Yeah.
It's like, well, that and yeah, just going back to Trump briefly, it's like, it's so infuriating, isn't it? And you're right, I don't think he should be in that position, and I think something like this is really highlighting the reason he shouldn't be in that position.
Yeah.
He's just sat on stage every night waffling, whatever comes, he just riffs, doesn't he? Whatever comes into his head, comes out with his mouth. But what I can't help but like him, because certain times he says things, and he just lightens my day. So on two ends of the spectrum, he says the disinfectant, injection disinfectant thing is one end. But the opposite of that was the comment he came out with a couple of days ago about Joe Biden. And one of the reporters was asking him, do you think the election will be fair because of what we're going through, and there might be social distancing at the election, and if there's postal votes, and basically, do you think it might be a concern the next election, whether it's going to be fair, and one side or the other saying you stole the votes. And he turns around and just says off the cuff, you know, I can't tell you what's going to happen in an election. He said, on one hand, you've got a sleepy guy, referring to Joe Biden, a sleepy guy in a basement somewhere who the media are giving a free pass to.
Yeah.
And I think it's just that just sums it up.
Yeah.
That really eloquently, simply sums up Joe Biden and the Democrats.
Well, who was it? I can't remember the man who did the Gilbert, the cartoon, wasn't it? What was his name? Scott Adams.
Oh, yeah.
He's done a lot of work on hypnosis and stuff like that. And he did management and communication and stuff. And he said, I remember sending this podcast to my friend Dom again before the Trump election, because I always thought he was a bit of an idiot, and I thought, wow, I never really thought of it like that, because Scott Adams was saying, I recognise the way that he messages, and what he does, he verbally builds pictures, so he puts pictures in the public mind. He said the way he messages, he's the best messenger that he'd ever heard, the way he verbally creates images in people's head when describing people. And you look at the nicknames he does, you know, so he said, you know, there is going to be Sleepy Joe, Sleepy Joe, Sleepy Joe. And that's going to get, and then all of a sudden you're going to get the public repeating that. I think it's very clever. I think, I wouldn't say sinister, but maybe it is. I could totally understand why some people would see sinister. But that's where I say, I don't think in that sort of stuff, he's not an idiot. But when he's talking about disinfectant, he's an idiot. But I don't think he is with messaging. And I think he's so... Do you know what I've noticed what he does now? He contradicts himself all the time. So we talk about what is it, Georgia that's opening up. So everyone's going mad because Georgia's opening up. So he's saying, one minute he's saying Georgia should open up. Yeah, I'm glad Georgia are opening up. And then the next day he's saying, no, Georgia shouldn't open up. I advise them not to open up. So you guarantee what happens if it all goes wobbly in Georgia, he can then say, look, I told them not to open up. But he also said they the opposite. So if it goes right, he can claim he was right, and he did that then. So he's kind of, I don't know. You know what else I've noticed? Remember there was a little while ago when he came to the UK, Trump did, and there was this, and it does rounds every now and again on Facebook, which was the reason why we don't like you, Mr. Trump, is because this, that, and a big list of things why people wouldn't like him. And there was one bit in there that said you have you have a lack of self humour. You don't have any. You don't have humour, and I just thought that just goes to show these people don't watch him. I get you might listen. I get if you're on the left, you won't like his jokes, but you can't say he's not funny, because if you say he's not funny, to me that means that you're only getting your messages from your side. Because what happens is that he says something, it gets filtered through a certain message that gives out what you want. But you're not watching it live. Because if you watch some of his performances live, he is like a stand-up comedian, right? He is. And I've seen comedians talk about him, say that he's a perfect stand-up. He's got the timing of a stand-up. So what was it? The young, what was that? Sun Tzu, the Chinese... Art of War, wasn't it? And he said that if you know yourself and you know your opponent, you'll win every time. Yes. If you only know yourself but not your opponent, you win 50-50. And if you don't know either. And that's the point. If you want to beat the man, you need to be able to, you need to understand the man, and you've got to understand what the appeal is to other people. Because if you understand the appeal, then you can break that, then you can tell those people while they're wrong and try and win them over. And that's where I think everyone's going wrong, because politics should be the art of persuasion. It's not. It's just mudslinging. No one's trying to win anyone over.
And this is has made it clear as anything. It's outrageous to me that in the time of Trump, that the Democrats, that's the best they've got, is Joe Biden. It's insane.
But you know what?
You'd be hard pressed to pick anyone who's a weaker candidate. And like, I think all they're hoping is that he doesn't have to go on stage. I don't know. Yeah, if they go head to head, he's toast, isn't he? If people are paying any kind of attention, sure, there's always going to be a huge percentage of people that are going to ignore politics and just vote with their heart, and he'll get a lot of those votes. But the Biden, and the Democrats will. But I mean, look, if you put one up against the other, it's a no-brainer. It's outrageous. And then you've got stuff like what Nancy Pelosi was talking about. She went on Fox News the other day. I mean, there's footage of her from like a month and a half ago, walking in Chinatown in New York, saying, come down to Chinatown. And Nancy Pelosi's like, pretty much as it's that at the moment, she's the head of the Democratic Party.
Yeah.
She's the leader of the House. She's the head of, she's the most important person in the Democratic Party until Joe Biden actually wins the nomination. And so she's like, what, 2 months ago, a month and a half ago, saying, come down to Chinatown, we want you to come around, spend your money, blah, blah, blah. So this is all on tape. She then last week is on Fox News being interviewed. The guy pulls up the footage. She then turns around and uses the excuse that she was just trying to stop the racist attacks against Chinese people. And it's like, it goes back to what I was saying. You can't lie to people. The information's out. You can't. You're playing that old politics game and people won't know if I fudge the truth a bit. It's like, you can't play that game. It's out there. But then again, I suppose, thinking about it now, Trump does it, like you just said. But I think with Trump, it's different, isn't it? There's it's just a barrage of it. You get lost in it. And you're either like that he appeals to you or he doesn't.
I think
the Democrats are trying to pretend that they're the alternative. They're the moral alternative.
Yeah,
you can't keep on making those mistakes and realistically be the thing that you so wish to be. It's not. I don't know. It's a messy place. Seems really messy.
Oh well, you said a little. What you said a bit. You said he's the worst that they could possibly. You know, I can't believe he's the best. But he was the best to me. He was one of the best out of the people that were up for the leadership thing. I mean, so many of them. You know, I know Bernie Sanders and stuff. And yeah, I get that. I see the argument that he would have scared so many people off. I kind of get that. But you know what? I say that I get really frustrated. I came to the conclusion the other day that the two people that we've got up against each other are reflective of the level of debate in American politics. The level of debate in American politics and the American media is so trash that to me, those people competing with each other are fairly reflective of the level of debate. So, I don't know, it's a mess. Justin Webb? Is it Justin Webb, the reporter, the American reporter? He was talking about the media in America. And this is a man at the BBC. And I remember he writes for Unheard. And he made a point. He said, America is also, sad to say, a nation which reported facts are distrusted to an unnerving extent with consequences that are not always predictable. An example from my life. A good friend was coming to London from San Francisco recently and asked if we might meet. coronavirus, I emailed. Are you really coming? His response, we can have a good discussion about media-induced hysteria. Here's the point. He's a Democrat, a left-wing Democrat, and one of the cleverest people I know. I assume he saw the coronavirus reporting in the media that he watches and reads, but did not believe it because he knows that reporters like him cannot stand Trump. The media landscape in the US today is Putin-like, flooded with nonsense nobody believes to an extent that even reliable reporters are discounted. There is no impartiality. There is no truth. And this is a man, this is Justin, you know, he's a reporter, he's the US correspondent for the BBC. And that's dreadful because, you know, the press should be one of the cornerstones of a functioning democracy. And there's very little that isn't biased anymore in America. You know, at least here there is an attempt. I mean, I pointed out to you today, didn't I? You know, we've been talking about China quite a lot, about the numbers and the mistrust and stuff. And that, and again, you know, we've been talking about that for weeks. I'm not saying that we're plenty of people have been talking about what we've been talking about. But it just seems now that the BBC and everyone, because of all the problems with the World Health Organization and Trump falling out with them and stuff. And then Wuhan doubled their death rate. But there's been a lot of reports lately coming out of Hong Kong where a lot of reporters are getting arrested and banged up, and doctors as well, who are trying to say that their numbers are a lot bigger than before than they're saying. Now, again, you've got to take that with a pinch of salt because I don't know who these people are. You know, I know that there's a lot of people that, you know, that have got an axe to grind with China who might be from Hong Kong or whatever. But you got to keep an open mind. But I certainly wouldn't. But to me, the Chinese have proved that they can't be trusted for many, many, many things. And so now they're finally talking about whether or not China should be trusted on the numbers. But I only listened to two podcasts a day on the BBC. So the last two, they've spoken about this one subject. But they always have to follow it up straight away with that being a right-wing talking point and opinion of Donald Trump, as if to say, and there is an element of guilt that then I think, oh, right, if I talk about that, then people are going to think that I'm kind of backing up Trump or I'm on Trump's side, and I'm not. But two things can be right at the same time, but you always get that, if you have that opinion, you're linked to that, and that's bad.
Yeah. I think that's a perfect example of the problems with political correctness. There are loads of good things about political correctness, of course, but these are the problems with it. That you almost kind of constantly have to watch what you say for fear of kind of not being seen as being bigoted. It's quite bizarre. I mean, like straight away. I mean, when he like Trump was doing it. A month ago, calling it China virus or Wuhan virus or whatever, and this mass media frenzy of like, how dare he? It's not, it's racist. And then, well, same thing happened when he banned the flights from China. He was being called racist, wasn't it? Criticising major newspapers. But I also see it in there was an article, an interview done with, I think it was the head of the Chinese embassy in the UK with the BBC. There's calls now for them for there to be an investigation of the outbreak of coronavirus. So I presume an international investigation within China, and China turned it down flat out.
Yeah.
And this representative was saying to the BBC correspondent that it's not the right time, and it's well, basically kind of it's culturally insensitive, and it reeks of anti-Chinese bias.
Yeah.
And it's almost as though, I don't know, I kind of, like part of me thinks it's almost as though they're playing the game. They know that they only have to say
hint at that, words. Yeah.
But yeah, like they only have to hint at it and we'll back off.
And the people that have got that type of antenna that kind of focuses on that, I think, right, that's a good argument to go with because that's a good anti-Trump argument. And then they end up, you know, fighting China's corner because they're against Trump.
Yeah, exactly. And it's almost this kind of like this naive kind of lefty version of the world. And you think, well, that's quite, I find that quite dark because you know very well that in the halls of power in China, they don't act like that.
No.
There's no way that that's of any importance in their world at all.
No, of course not.
I mean, we're talking about the same country that supposedly locked up a million or 2 million Muslims in re-education camps, yeah, in order to stop them being radicalised. You know, they've got no concerns about being culturally insensitive when they want to be. I mean, look, and you had the story this week or last week about putting up signs in restaurants saying no blacks allowed in because supposedly they carry coronavirus.
Yeah.
It's like, and there's you could reel off so much kind of anti-foreigner sentiment from China. So there's no way that in reality they really care about that stuff that much. But of course they use it with us in order for us to stop talking about things.
Well, they have become too powerful, haven't they? I mean, I think this is what will come out of this, is that we will reassess how China's viewed, because China has become too powerful, in my opinion, because financially it's put its you know, the financial tentacles all around the world, isn't it? We saw with the 5G thing in Britain that there was a lot of worry about it, but also you saw it everywhere. You see it in Hollywood, don't you? You know, but no Hollywood film will ever have a Chinese baddie anymore, will they? Do you remember they have to go to North Korea now to do their bad, because they've got to sell their product in China. And then you saw you saw how powerful it was there with the basketball, because American basketball is massive in China, and when the Hong Kong process was going on.
Just briefly going back to, because a lot of the time I kind of have conversations with people and they know nothing about a lot of this stuff.
Yeah.
There was the recent Star Wars movie came out, and one of the lead characters is the I think he's like a British black guy, isn't he? And so he's obviously one of the lead roles, and his face is quite large on the poster one. But the Chinese, you have a look, just Google Chinese Star Wars poster. His face has been shrunk down to a kind of tiny little bit part black compared to the original poster, the poster that's used in the West. It's just blatant racism.
Well, it just goes to show, doesn't it? You know, it's all
like tiptoe around anything. It's just blatant racism.
Yeah,
and if we were doing stuff like that, we'd be hauled over the coals.
Yeah. No, but what it was, one of the basketball coaches spoke up in support of the Hong Kong protesters, didn't they? And then all of a sudden China put their foot down. And then you got LeBron James, who's probably the biggest American basketball star, who's usually, you know, very, 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 a big spokesman for social justice. Then all of a sudden went public with doing a press conference agreeing criticism of China shouldn't be allowed, shouldn't happen. And it's just that the power of China, and then the World Health Organization, this is another example, right? Look, I'm no expert, and I would say that the World Health Organization is overall a massively good thing. I think especially in times like now, it should be funded properly, and we need to all work together to try and find a solution to that. So let's be clear, right? But it does seem that they made a lot of big mistakes. It said that the head of the World Health Organization, an Ethiopian guy, there's quite strong contacts financially between Ethiopia as a country and China, and they've been known when it comes to votes in the UN that China puts pressure on people to vote their way, as do America and as do all big powers, by the way. So they're using their financial clout to try and get their own way more. But even in the middle of January, they took the Chinese line, basically saying that there's no human to human transmission, and then they don't want that. They put pressure that Taiwan isn't seen as a separate country because they think that Taiwan is part of China. So they do their best not so Taiwan isn't seen as an independent country. And someone asked the head of the world, well, not the head, one of the people in a televised meeting about how well Taiwan had done, and he just wouldn't answer. He kind of pretended to get cut off, didn't he? And then wouldn't answer the question because he can't even acknowledge that Taiwan is a country. Now that should show that China is putting pressure in many, many different areas, which in not a healthy way, because I don't thing. They were talking about it the other on a podcast I listened to the other day, I think Freakonomics one, and they were talking about that they had a debate between two people, and that China, I think 2006 was allowed into the World Trade Organization, and they hoped that opening up to China would change their ways a little bit and kind of more meet us in the middle. But it doesn't seem to have happened that way. And they mentioned that 20 years ago, or 15 years ago, there were 20 pharmaceutical companies designing and making medicines and health stuff in America. Today, there is none. And they've all gone to China. And they've all gone to China to save a few quid. That is part of globalization, isn't it? That in general, there is an overall good because it helps world trade. It increases GDP of the world and nations. It spreads the wealth to a certain extent because it gives jobs to people in poorer parts of the world. You know, China has brought so many people out from farming into cities, into production. But it does have an effect on individuals in America, where people used to have good, decent jobs, now no longer have good, decent jobs. So even though there is an overall good, certain individuals in your own country aren't doing as well. And we as voters expect our politicians to have a balance between helping us and helping the world. And I think that balance can sometimes go into, you know, people thinking that we want to make the world a better place and don't worry about us. And I see that sometimes because, yeah, you know, I see that argument. But equally, you know, you need to get that balance right. And I think that will change. I think more stuff, even if it doesn't come back to our countries, I don't think we're going to be as reliant on China.
No, definitely not. I think you're right. I think it will just end up going to
India or places like that. Thailand, Vietnam and things. I don't see them coming back.
Because I can't see. I think we're hooked now, aren't we?
Yeah.
Like cheap rubbish, don't we? Can't get enough of it.
Yeah.
I don't see us stopping that. But very difficult to take away something that you've been given. And so, but I think, you know, you talking about the those vital critical goods that have been outsourced to China, I think that's, I mean, like stuff like the conversation we're having here in the UK about PPE. Why can't we get PPE? There's people, loads of people on the left throwing their toys out and blaming the government for not being able to get the PPE on time. It's a disgrace that the NHS can't get the PPE. But I haven't heard anyone have a conversation about why can't we get the PPE?
Yeah.
Because we've outsourced everything, haven't we?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But that was a great thing. That was a good thing. Globalization was all, you know, and again, that's like you pick the bits of it that suit you, you know? But there's good and bad on all sides, isn't
there? I found that odd. That was odd. I sent you the Hancock's now. Look, and I'm not saying that we are without fault, because I think we are. They're definitely fault. That we definitely need to look at fault when it's all over with. I'm not for one second saying that things couldn't have been done better. But it was weird. I found it weird that the Guardian and all the usual crowd on Facebook having a pop at Hancock or the government because we sold a load of stuff to China in January and February. And why did we sell it when we knew it might be coming here, right? And that was an idiotic thing to do. Yet when Trump did it 2-3 weeks ago in Canada, when Trump stopped all their stuff going, a load of ventilators going to Canada, that was then reported as a disgusting thing for Trump to do. And it's just that constant inconsistency. It's like there isn't, you know, we haven't got a moral argument. It totally depends on who's doing it. So if Trump does it, it's bad. But if the other lot do it, it's fine. It's moral, and it's not, and that's what you know. That's the sort of stuff that bugs me. I want to be able to have a grown up debate on what's good and what's not.
But just going back to the essential goods, the critical goods. It's interesting. I heard someone talking about how it's led to, it's kind of opened the door to China being a kind of world leader in a sense, because you've got it's kind of obvious that this is a first crisis in what 50 60 70 100 years, you could say, that America aren't taking a lead on. Apart from numbers on the world stage, they're really not taking a lead. And I think a lot of that comes down to the fact that you've got Trump, who's a bit of a like nationalistic tendencies and wants to do the best for his country, and so doesn't want to get involved in the outside world or the big organisations, the UN, etc., the World Health Organization. But you've also got the fact that they don't produce the goods that they can spread to the rest of the world to help them out.
Yeah.
So you've kind of crept open a door a little bit for China to jump in and send goods to various countries in the EU and the rest of the world.
Yeah.
To kind of push the idea that they're the new world leader, you know?
Well, you don't know how the cards are going to fall, do you? You know, they're back up and working. We're all locked in our houses with an economy on hold. And if you think you could put an economy on hold in the freezer, you don't understand economies. You know, China is still functioning. So we don't know who's going to end up more powerful at the end of all this. We were talking about Africa, weren't we? And I think you're starting to get some of the negative stories in relation to Africa now. They're now saying that 150 million people are at risk of famine soon. You know, and I was thinking about it. You know, you've got all them. It's not just that not allowed to go to work in those places. They don't have any work left. You know, you think flowers. And so, we still buy fruit and veg and stuff like that. So that stuff's going. But there was this on the BBC News the other day. I think it was talking about Kenya and places like that where they grow loads of flowers to send to Holland to go flower markets. It's dropped by 80%. They just don't. They, no one's buying. And when will we be? When will we be buying flowers soon?
Yeah.
You know, it's not just flowers, is it? It's everything. You can't. Everyone's saying, "Oh, the birds are singing, and we've got dolphins in the River Thames, and we've got seals. Isn't it lovely?" Yeah, but 150 million, you know, people in the developing world soon look like they could be facing famine. You know, I get it's nice to have it for some of us to kind of be getting all our odd jobs done and be stuck at home and spending time with the family. I really, that's a nice part of it. But just conscious, it just can't be forever. You know, the system isn't designed for that. Maybe a different system will evolve from the ashes of it. Who knows? Maybe. But if that is the case, it's going to be pretty ugly. You know, the transition to it will be pretty ugly. So, look, I don't like ending on a bad note. You know, one thing I have learnt, though, if it all does go belly up, I can't become a teacher. That's it. I can't go into teaching. That's definitely crossed off my list. I don't have the I don't have the patience. It's like, what do you mean you don't understand? Anyway, we best go, because we've gone on a bit.
Okay.
All right, Jules. See you next week.
See you next week.
Bye.
Stay safe.
Yeah, see ya.